Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So there I am, sitting in, what you talking about, Willis, when I get the news that I can't go to work today.
So here's a story I want to tell. When I started DJing, I was a teenager, and I had to go through a booking agency to find any work. And by that time, the business had gone ugly. It had gone sour. The checks always bounced.
Oh, geez.
And so I ended up working for, you know, 2-3 months at a time without getting paid. And not knowing that's how show business works in a lot of places, and you have to get out of it. Is that an experience you've had anywhere, Penn?
Oh, yeah.
And so I told everybody about that was thinking about going to that company. That was going to be a problem, and that caused problems for my future bookings in that town for a very long time. And then when I moved out here, what I didn't know is that that guy had become a food and beverage manager for one of the two duopoly companies here in town, running most of the casinos. And I could not get a DJ job in a mainstream casino.
Oof.
And that is why I have nothing to say about podcast networks.
Yeah. Here we go.
Brothers, sisters, siblings, welcome to Penn Sunday School. I'm Matt Donnelly. We're broadcasting from Show Creator Studio South here in Las Vegas. And things we haven't talked about, Penn winning Wheel of Fortune. We haven't talked about when Penn saw the Fooler's Tour and did the Fooler's Tour show. He was somewhere in Tulsa. Here he is, preaching the love, Penn Jillette.
I'm preaching love, and I can't be anywhere in Tulsa without being at the Bob Dylan Center.
That's right.
That's what I did all
That's
the time.
What you did.
And the people that work, great guy named Stephen Jenkins, who runs the whole Dylan Center.
Yeah,
That's
yeah.
his thing. It's his Dylan Center. Should be Steve Jenkins Dylan Center.
Ah.
He laughs at me for how much I, how focused I am there. The guy whose job it is.
Yeah.
Through all the Dylan archives, he goes, it's a little much, isn't it, Ben? He comes up and he taps me, you know, because I'm so intent on what I'm reading. He stands next to me for like a long time and then finally taps me because I'm so focused on the exhibits.
Well, you have a unique style of fandom. Because most people, when they become zealots of something, they get so far into it that they become critics, you know? So they become such an expert as they actually can't wait to line up their critiques of this album or actually if you compare this to that, it's actually, and then other Dylan fans do this and I hate this. And you seem to just block all that out anyway. So you keep all of the supreme nerddom of any true Dylan fan without becoming a picky asshole.
I try not to be.
Yeah.
My thinking is, and I've always, and this is kind of sort of ish going away.
Mm-hmm.
I try to wait for it in my children, and I see little glimpses of it, but it's less common than when I was a child. I think I've talked about this before. Now that everything is singles, everything is essentially what we would call 45s.
Yes.
Everything is.
Everything is, the world.
So there was a thing that I used to do. That I'm sure people do now. There's just a different way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But the way I used to do it was I would get an album, you know, and when I bought an album, it was a big investment. It was like $3 or $4 at that time, which is, you know, would be $30 or $40 now.
Yeah.
And also I was a child.
Right.
So that was a lot of lawn mowing,
yeah.
which is what I did. I mowed lawns for the Kramers. Two brothers lived across the street.
Yeah.
And I had a paper route. Actually, I had worse than a paper route. I had the worst kind of paper route possible. I was a paper route cop.
Oh, no.
There was a throwaway newspaper called the Town Crier. Okay? And it was a throwaway, which means it went to, they had to give it out to every house.
Whether they subscribed or not.
And you had all sorts of rules. Like, you couldn't put it in the mailbox. It was a federal offense. So you had to put it, you know, someplace like that.
Yeah.
And nobody liked the Town Crier. Nobody.
Right.
And they would hire paper boys, mm-hmm. okay? And I think all of the paper boys except me just threw them in the trash and got their money, right?
Ah.
Or didn't do the whole route.
Yeah.
I did the whole route. And therefore, I advanced very quickly through the ranks. So I became what was called route supervisor.
Yeah.
Route supervisor, which meant I had to go to different places and rat people out.
Oh, my God.
That was my job. And most of the time, I took my bicycle, but sometimes in that way that we were so embarrassed of when we were children, but now when we do it for our children, we don't care at all. My parents would sometimes drive me at my job.
Mm-hmm.
So they're doing my job while I'm doing my job.
The whole family
yeah.
was narking on all the young paper boys.
Exactly. So I would go to the doors and I'd go, excuse me, I'm from the Town Crier. Have you been receiving your Town Crier? They would go, yes, we don't want to get that anymore. Please tell them to stop.
Sorry, not receiving it is not an option. Have a good day.
Exactly. So that's what I did. That was my job. And because I don't know what's wrong with me,
yeah.
but I actually did my job. Whereas anybody else who was route supervisor would have called up and said, everything's great.
Yeah.
And then they wouldn't have gone out to narc on people who didn't do their job.
Right.
It's a perfect ecosystem, right? You give us the papers. He throws them away. I check to make sure they were delivered. I say they were. I come back. Everyone's happy.
Any of the other children, were they aware that you had this job?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Not because I kept it secret.
No.
But I just, because I didn't know who the paper boys were.
No, I'm sure they would never even occur to them to figure it out, right?
Right.
You know, I'm sure they're just, most kids just, if they get caught, you're like dead to rights. You're like, ah, damn it. I got caught.
You just, you know.
You weren't thinking, who?
Yeah.
Who turned me in?
You're not trying to look at Sydney and going,
yeah.
What do you mean you pled guilty?
And also it wasn't like, some like morning report. We're like, Gillette, get in here. We're suspicious of Samantha's route particularly. We need you to crack down. Give me everything you know.
Yeah. They gave me houses to check particularly. And I would go there. I mean, probably I could owe my whole career to the Town Crier. Because if you got the balls to knock on someone's door
yeah.
and say, did you get a piece of shit paper that they don't want?
And everyone's answer is the same.
Everyone.
We don't want it.
We don't want it. We haven't been getting it good. Everyone's answer is that. I think if you have the personality that keeps doing that, you can have your own theater in Vegas. I don't think there's any other skill required. Fuck juggling. Fuck talking. Fuck doing magic. It's just a skill of, did you get the Town Crier? Yeah, good. We don't want to.
Like getting a knock now. I can't knock over here. You knock. Hi, I'm from Google. Are you getting your Bed Bath & Beyond email? Yes, no, I bought a piece of soap there once for a Christmas party, and I didn't realize I had signed up for a thing. I can't figure out where the unsubscribe button is, and every fucking day I'm getting an email from Bed Bath & Beyond, and I don't want it.
Thank you. That was my job.
That was your job.
And I had it for a while. And I don't know what I got paid. I don't remember.
Yeah.
I should say I signed an NDA. And this is the one NDA I'm honoring from the Town Crier.
Buttoned up.
Sorry.
Sorry, guys.
Can't give you that information. Sorry. Totally. If you'd like the nuclear submarine codes and you're really rich in Australia, I'll lay those on you.
But my salary for the Town Crier.
Totally. Lip sealed, key is in my pocket.
And everyone after that event was like, I even told the guy I don't want it. Like at the next block party.
Yeah.
And they're bitching about the Town Crier. Like, no, I met the guy.
I met the town crier guy. It's just a child. But I said to him very, very clearly, I don't want to get it. Now, for 2 weeks before that, I hadn't been getting it. After I told him I didn't want to get it, it's coming like clockwork. Also, there was another job at Route Supervisor, which is the other horrible job. Anyone who was sick,
yeah,
which meant too sick to come, get the town criers and throw them in the trash. Too sick for that, I had to take over his route.
Oh.
So sometimes I'd be doing two or three routes in a week.
This.
Everybody's. I'd be doing everybody's route in places I didn't know, neighborhoods I didn't know.
Whoever thought of this.
Not to pretend that I had to go to like South Central.
No.
Cabrini Green.
Westfield, Massachusetts' dodgiest corners. But also, whoever thought of this around the time that you started doing this was like, I figured it out, guys. I'm a genius. And then you stopped doing it. And then no one else did it. No one else. Certainly not do both parts.
Right, right.
There's no way you found any other teenager who could do both parts.
Right. Right.
With family support.
Yeah.
Guys, like, I thought I figured it all out. I was really helping out the town crier. Turns out I found Penn Jillette, and now...
Yeah. Unfortunately, the one guy who did this job now has his theater in Las Vegas.
He can't do it anymore.
Can't do it anymore.
Town crier's fucked.
He would, because he gave us 2 weeks' notice. You know that no one else? He gave us 2 weeks' notice and didn't say, fuck yourself.
I think if we just tell him that he did say he'd stay on... That he did sign paperwork that said he would give at least 2 months' notice, so therefore he still has to work. He'd come back and do it.
Yeah, yeah. And that's true, by the way.
So you still own a house there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So when you go home, how many town criers are sitting there?
Well, they're very careful about that house. They go, when you go to 48 Place Terrace, you make sure you, because he's a narc.
Make sure that town crier.
He's still, I've checked. I've checked the records. He still owns the house. So now there are exactly 53 years of town criers every week. So 52 times 53, which is ready?
About 2,500.
About 2,500 town criers piled up.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the whole insulation of the house is now town criers.
Some of those coupons had to have expired.
Some of them had to.
Some of them had to.
Yeah, an awful, awful at Friendly's. Can't get that anymore.
Can't get there.
And I've told you many times, that was the name of the milkshake.
Yes.
And then it said on the cup. It was a specially made cup, and it was plastic, like reusable plastic.
Yeah.
It said, awful, awful. Awful big, awful good.
Oh.
Boom. That went away really fast.
Turns out people don't like ordering things that say awful.
Well, there's terrible herpes here.
Yeah, terrible herpes.
Which is amazing. They keep going.
Yeah.
Let's go to terribles.
Yes. Yeah.
And it looks so much like terrible herpes.
It does look like terrible herpes, and it seems like he could live up to his name should you go often.
Yeah.
I remember when I first met him, I was like, really? There can't be a place called Terribles. And then I was over it after a week.
Yeah.
You live here. You're like, yeah.
Then you found out that Arizona Charlie's was really terrible. It just wasn't named that.
They're far more because it was below that bar than you think.
Yeah, there's
here
below
in town.
Terrible. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Right here.
Yeah.
Don't even go to prom.
Eureka sounds triumphant, but not when you arrive.
No.
Not the Eureka Casino.
No. So I would make my money.
Yeah.
Honestly. Yeah. I made an honest buck. And I would buy a record, right?
Mm-hmm.
Take the record home and I would listen to it. Now, when I took a record home to listen to it, I didn't, you know, put it on the background while I was doing something else.
Yeah.
When I listened to records, this is so embarrassing. I would listen to the record and take notes. You know, oh, this line is really, I like the way he pronounces this.
Yeah.
And I'd listen, probably when I bought a record, I probably listened to it a dozen times without stopping. You know, just boom, 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 mm-hmm. boom, boom. There were songs, I couldn't even perceive this. Now looking back on it, there were songs I didn't like, but that wasn't an option.
Right.
If there was a song on the record that wasn't my favorite, I would say to myself, I'm not understanding this.
Mm.
and I'd play that one particularly, Drop the Needle, and listen to that more than the others until I understood it.
You are what every musician dreams of.
And I would say, you know, well, this was when I was a little bit older, Lily Rosemary and the Jack of Hearts seems like a throwaway song on Blood on the Tracks. So let's really dig into that. Let's really listen to it and see what the characters are and how they're working together and what they're really going for here. You know?
Yeah.
And so consequently, I'm one of the only people who really, I say every day, every week on this show, I say You Become Naked.
Yeah.
Which is from Revolution Number 9.
Yeah.
Which incidentally, I know Revolution Number 9 very well.
Right.
You know, that's that, you know, that
weird track.
That weird track on the Beatles record.
Yeah.
That is on side four.
Yeah.
Third cut, and people don't listen to it much.
No. You fast forward or say that's the end.
Right. But there was no fast forward. They had to pick up the needle.
Yeah.
So it forced people to be a little more like me.
Yes. Yeah.
So when I'm at the Dylan Center, I go, oh man, Chimes of Freedom. I know that's really good, but I don't think I've listened to it enough. So I stand there at Chimes of Freedom, whereas the songs that I love, Tangled Up in Blue, is 8 feet away.
Yeah.
But I'm there at the Chimes of Freedom. And of course, Man in Me, which everybody knows, the Man in Me from Coen Brothers movie, Jeff Bridges, Bowling.
Lebowski.
Everybody knows that is the title theme of The Big Lebowski. Just like, oh, it's a Dylan song.
Yeah.
But I'd never really dug into The Man in Me. So I listened to 4 different versions and read about how it was composed. And then if you want to really find a time when you cannot get through to me, when just like people could like be slapping me in the face and I'd be like focused. Right. They had Joker Man, which is from Infidels. They have on a screen, like a screen, like a regular screen. You know what a screen is. But I want to describe, it's like
rectangular?
Vertical. Instead of horizontal, okay. It's vertical. So it would show the shape of a page.
And
it's very big. And they have 12 drafts of Joker Man by Bob Dylan. Some handwritten, some typewritten. Okay? And the screen is interactive, touch screen. You can go through each version as he revises it. And then it has an interactive feature. I believe that's called the pendulette feature, where you can tap a line of the song. It'll then bring you all the versions up and how each word of that line changes.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
Oh, it's so good.
In order, like historically?
Yeah.
Oh, that is awesome.
So you say, oh, he was really interested in the dragon here, and now he's not.
One day he came in and said, fuck that dragon.
And it just goes through like that, you know. And he's, you know, water cannons, Molotov cocktails, the order of the atrocities changes, and you can see how the rhythm of the song changes. It's just incredible.
You know, I really, actually, because I haven't been here for 5 weeks, so one thing I saw was Peter Pan Goes Wrong.
I saw it, yeah.
And I was fascinated to talk to them afterward and say, like, I basically was like to all of them, like, what the hell is your filter? How in a show that does that many jokes that fast, that often, and so many different kinds of jokes, how do you figure out what's in and what's out? And they were saying, oh, well, we change shit all the time. We add this. You saw a line tonight that we're cutting after tonight. It was in for 2 weeks and now it's out. And told me that line and said, whatever. And I think it's fascinating is that I have another friend who directed The Foolers, who's directing the play that goes wrong in Indiana.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I think it's fascinating that he's being handed this finished, printed, boom, body of work to be directed, this show. Compared to what that show was in the minds of the people who first performed it, which was this living, breathing, changing piece of art. That transition to me is like so crazy to me.
I when working with the Wrong Boys, Mischief Theater.
Yes.
No one calls them the Wrong Boys, but Mischief Theater.
Yeah.
I call them the Wrong Boys. Fuck them. The Wrong Boys. I was Root Supervisor for Tom Cryer, goddammit. We were working on Magic Goes Wrong.
Yeah.
It's just, goddamn, that's a good show. I wish they'd bring it back. Anyway, there's always talk about it, but
Henry's taking his solo version off Broadway, I believe, as we speak.
I know. I mean, I get paid and shit.
Yeah.
I still want the full
thing. You want the full thing.
Although,
Henry's amazing.
Amazing.
Yeah.
One of the greatest performers ever was.
Just a genius comedic performer.
Genius. And also has, as far as I can tell, no flaws.
Yeah.
Which is nutty.
We'll get there.
This root supervisor.
I've been assigned to find Henry's flaws.
No, but you know, you've met him. Sweet.
Yes.
Kind.
Yeah.
Intelligent.
Yeah.
Educated. Every single work ethic. Not to say the other Robin Boys don't have.
No. But all of them is like passionate without being grandiose about it at all.
Yeah. And also, I found them too brutal for my taste.
Oh, just in, out, what's in, what's out?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Just a little bit too brutal. I know you're supposed to be brutal. I know you have to kill your darlings, but I would go, oh.
You're used to it, but only from one person.
Right.
You're used to Teller being able to
do it. No, Teller doesn't cut stuff on me.
Oh, he doesn't?
You know that Teller never does. Never says cut.
Actually, I'm saying that like surprise. I actually know this for a fact.
Yeah.
Because one of the reasons why I've been working with you more is because he knows I'll talk to you about lines.
No, he won't say a word about
lines.
I'd fucking kill him. Don't be all town crier, root supervisor.
No way.
No, I would kill him.
You're right. So in the process, it's fast. Even saying no.
Really fast.
Like, nah, it doesn't work. Goodbye.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll be in the audience and I'll see like Jonathan doing something that I really like and it's not quite there.
Yeah.
And you go backstage and they go, that's out. And you go, oh. I thought he was going to be, but you know, they end up with great stuff.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah.
And I'm able to do that in our show.
Yeah.
I don't have to talk to anybody.
But it's a lab environment. You have a lab environment all the time.
Yeah. So I go out on stage and I just, all of a sudden, I'm there going, I just didn't do that line. Good.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't even decided not to do it. It's just, it's almost at a subconscious.
No, actually, level. An example you're talking about right now is that in The Foolers, we did Misdirection. Misdirection, obviously, is a staple of
your
show.
And I stole something from you.
Oh.
I got to tell you this. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, you say that first.
Well, we went and we rewatched the first time it was on Fallon.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, it's not the piece.
Yeah.
It's not. It hasn't gone through the experiments and even found playfulness, like little lines, like you're just going through elements where you've stopped and found moments in it and stuff like that. And we were like jaw dropped at like, oh gosh, this is so strange. we've clicked on the line and we're seeing an early version of a trick that we were doing where it's well written within an inch of his life, you know, and it got there. It wasn't written whole cloth. It got there. So it was neat to see an early version of it.
Yeah. Well, the one I got from you that if you'd suggested it to me,
you would have hated it.
I would have hated it.
Yeah.
But because you first suggested it to me in an earlier version.
Yes.
And I hated it. And then I did it.
Yeah.
And I went, oh, I liked it. And then you had a more intense version.
Yeah.
When I say, how many people saw Teller come out, get the chicken, and leave?
Yeah.
And you said, try being a little disappointed.
Yeah.
That never crossed my mind to be disappointed because that really isn't in my vocabulary.
Yeah.
I don't really look out at the audience and go, oh.
Yeah.
I don't do that any place on the show.
Right.
And I've never done it.
Right.
And I just went, oh. Because when I did Comedy Central, you know, since I wasn't writing for me, they were writing for me and I did all the voiceovers and they were, I think I probably finally worked with a couple dozen different producers.
Yeah.
They would write lines for me that were so out of my style of comedy, but it was my job.
Yes.
So I had to find a way to deliver them.
Yeah, yeah.
And I go, oh, yeah, well, I can do that now.
Yeah.
And it would sneak into the show. And I've never done disappointment in the audience reaction.
Yes.
You know, Piff does all the time. I've done a miracle. What, you know, that.
Yes.
I've never done that. And this one moment you said, be a little disappointed. So I went out and it's a mislead. They think the misdirection is going to be they didn't see Teller take the chicken and the misdirection is another step. But at that moment, I always would go, okay, now how many people, just okay.
Yeah.
And then you should be a little disappointed. I went, oh. So I went, oh, and it just felt really good on stage.
Yeah.
And then I saw you do it and you went, oh, that is even more. And if you'd have suggested that to me, I would have hated it.
Oh.
But I was sitting in the audience going, oh, he just said, oh, it's even more. That's a really nice, funny idea. more people saw what you're misdirecting from than saw the misdirection.
Yeah.
That fits in perfectly with the idea of the bit, which I didn't think it did when I saw it on paper. So now I started doing that and went, oh, that's good.
Yeah, no, it was actually some show in Iowa where it was authentic. I was authentically struck by more hands coming up.
Yeah.
And I thought it was something that's even more. I got this huge laugh. And then everyone said, you got to keep that in. And I was like, but I authentically saw it.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, 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 just do it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. Well, see, the thing is, when I don't have people working with me on the lines like you do,
right,
and we don't have a director,
right,
I didn't know I was going to steal it from you.
Oh, right. You just, it just came out of your mouth.
No idea.
Yeah, yeah.
No
yeah.
idea I was going to steal it from you. Came to that moment. And I went, oh, that's more. Oh, I like that. You know, because I had to find a different way to act it than you did.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, yeah, because I'm playing off of Alex. And
Yeah. So there's a whole different way to play it. So you're doing it almost to another person.
Yeah.
And I've got to do it almost musing.
Yeah.
And that's a different quality.
Yeah.
So I didn't know I had an angle. I didn't know I had an angle. But I had an angle.
Being able to shout, it should be all of y'all, it's a gorilla with cymbals, is one of the greatest moments of my life. I miss saying it. And the fun part for me was I authentically would just look for a lazy person who wouldn't raise their hand. So I always did it at someone in particular.
Yeah, I don't. What I do for that, because, you know, we've been selling better lately, so we're up on the balcony.
Uh-huh.
And people there are very far away.
Yes.
So whenever there's house lights up, I try as hard as I can to put my eyes way up and look at the very back. Exactly. You know, I saw, we did a show with Garth Brooks.
Mm-hmm.
Only met him once. But our mothers had died, both of our mothers had died within a year.
Mm-hmm.
So we were both in that level of grieving that was the same. And it was funny because it was a Christian and atheist who were both mama's boys talking about losing their moms backstage at the Hollywood Bowl. Because of that, I never talked to him again. I'm not in touch with him. I don't have his email, nothing. Don't know anything about Garth Brooks. But I always feel a warmth about him when I see him.
Yeah, yeah.
But when I watched him perform, I saw something that I think I've heard people talk about, but I've never saw anybody do. And it's so strange. It was a benefit for something, which I should care about very much and say why I do. But it was John Williams and Steven Spielberg, and we did a thing with the Symphony Orchestra, which was fabulous.
Very cool.
Straight Jacket Escape with us finishing the song on the instruments. We had we had to escape the straight jacket in time to take over the song from the symphony, and it was a good bit. It was a bit way back from Asparagus, and we don't get to do much because we only had Symphony Orchestras four times. A lot of amazing people on the bill, but Garth Brooks, he's still a superstar, no doubt about it.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
At that time, he was at a very powers. Peak, you know. I know all the bad people in town. What was the name of his song?
Friends in Low Places?
Yeah.
I know all the bad. So you click on I Got Friends in Low Places, and up comes I Know All the Bad People in Town. Scratch.
Yeah, exactly.
I know all the bad people in town, and we're chums. No. Friends is better than chums.
Yeah, yeah.
Bad people.
Anyway,
dragon. Anyway. No dragon.
So there is, in the hoity-toity seats, are, you know, Steven Spielberg, every
Dustin Hoffman. A-list celebrity.
All the way through there. And then way up. On the grass are all the people that waited in line for tickets.
And bought tickets. And
Springsteen has talked about how he wants real fans down in the front.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he plays down front. But Garth Brooks has a whole different way of doing it. I felt his entire set, he didn't do a whole show, of course, his entire set. And I saw Garth Brooks again at a smaller place. It's also true. It really feels like he's doing the show to the person in the last row.
Wow.
His head stays up all the time. His eyes stay up all the time. And he's gazing over Steven Spielberg's head. And it's weird because you would think you would feel down front like he's ignoring you.
Right.
But you don't.
No.
You feel like we're all together. It's an amazing.
Yeah, you feel like you're close. I bet you just feel like you're closer to this giant thing that's happening.
Yeah, and you can read it in books about showmanship that you're supposed to play to the last row. You know, Houdini would always talk about playing to the last row.
Right.
But I don't think I've ever seen someone do it, because I think with video and stuff. I mean, Mick Jagger doesn't do it.
No, you just assume the video is giving them everything.
Or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But Jagger plays to the people up front, mm-hmm. and Springsteen plays to the people up front. But Garth Brooks, it was like, wow, I wish I were back there.
That's powerful.
Yeah, really, really powerful. Yeah. So during that moment of It Should Be Everyone, I try to really Garth Brooks it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which is wicked hard to do.
Yeah.
It's really hard because it feels on stage so fucking awkward.
Right.
To have people hear and play to people that can't see you as well.
Yeah.
You know, you want to play face to face.
Yeah.
So I try, and it's willpower with me, I try to get my head up and get my eyes up and look up there and remember that that makes the people up front experience it stronger.
Yeah.
So that's what I do there. Looking back, you know, that line.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So I'm at the Dylan Museum, mm-hmm. and now I'm into Not Dark Yet, But It's Getting There, which I believe is called Not Dark Yet.
Yeah.
Scratch out for the title.
Not Dark Yet for the Dragon.
And it starts out Not Dark Yet, one of Dylan's most celebrated songs, and mm-hmm. rightly so. I no longer look for anything behind anyone's eyes. starts out with Lost Love, as Dylan very often does, and then just expands to all of life. And it's a chilling, tear-jerking, heartbreaking, brilliant song, okay? So I get the headphones on, and I am as focused on anything as ever. I'm watching how the bass line has changed over time and how he's interacting with it. And I'm paying real attention to Tony, who's his bass player at that point, Garnier. I'm really listening to the phrasing he's doing. Some of the lyrics are a little bit heavy-handed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm listening to how he's doing the phrasing. He pulls it back. So you discover the heavy-handedness and he doesn't give it to you. You know, it's really interesting with Dylan what he underlines.
Mm-hmm.
One of my many flaws as a speaker is I tend to underline in predictable ways. And whenever I underline in unpredictable ways, it feels richer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm studying Dylan doing that. And I've had kind of a peripheral feel that there are maybe 50 high school age people that have swarmed in, because it's on a Saturday. I usually go on a weekday, and there are many fewer people there. But it's pretty crowded today. I get the sense, I mean, walking from one exhibit to another, I'm not interacting with anyone. There are a bunch of high school age students. And I'm wearing, as I often am, my Piff Crew sweatshirt.
Yeah.
And I have the headphones on, and I mean, Teller saw me there, and Teller was afraid to wave to me. Okay, that's how focused I am. And the director of the center walks over to me, he told me, and then decides I'm too focused and walks away. Even though what he's going to give me is a tour of a back room.
Yes.
Okay. He still thinks I'm too focused to tell me that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And all of a sudden I get tapped on the arm, which I'm not offended by, but I'm kind of like, so I pull the headphones off, because you don't have headphones when you go around there. Pull the headphones off and I look. And it's a high school age boy. And he says, "Excuse me." And I go, "Yes." And he goes, "Where'd you get that sweatshirt?" And I said, "Piff gave it to me. He's a friend of mine." And he goes, "Cool."
End of combo. It's funny.
And
oh yeah,
I had to right away write to Piff, text him, and tell him.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Over the moon. Over the moon.
Pulled into Davenport, Iowa. I was wearing my Piff the Magic Dragon shirt.
Isn't that the beginning of a band song?
Yeah, yeah.
Pulled into Davenport.
Piff sweatshirt on my back.
With a dragon.
And some scratch.
It is a dragon.
Yeah, yeah. He's a dragon.
With, I think you would want me to correct that. He's a magic dragon.
He's a magic dragon, yes. So I get on the thing, and then the guy who works the hotel, the guy who's at the front desk, it's on the thing. We're all going up. And my light tech, young guy named Ben, great guy, on the tour with us. And the guy goes, hotel manager says, you got a lot of nerve wearing that in this area of town. I just stared at him. And then it was an awkward amount of like ding, ding, the elevator's going up. Just an awkward amount of time. My light tech just finally goes, why? Because I was giving him the air. It's like, this feels like a setup. I don't want to step on the joke. I'm just going to leave it be. I'm just letting the pregnant pause sit there.
Yeah.
But it went too long for my light tech's taste. Yeah. He goes, why? And he goes, oh, it's just that he's really popular. And then you guys are, I guess, competing with him.
Oh, that's a nice solution.
And we just both looked so disappointed. That's the lamest response to a setup that there was a bold setup and you had nothing behind it. We both think he was hoping that the elevator floor was going to come before he had to answer. He just let off. Whatever.
Because, you know, he pillaged our village. That's the answer you want.
He once killed a man just for snoring too loud.
We ran him out of town for blasphemy.
You know, he didn't have tar and feather on him before he played this town. Teller had the bellman bringing down his luggage.
Yeah.
And the bellman, this is when we played Tulsa.
Yeah.
We played River Spirit, which is Margaritaville Casino. Did that guy, he didn't make enough money to not die, did he? But very close.
I mean, talking about people like just squeezing that stone, getting blood after blood from a stone.
One fucking song, $1 billion.
Yeah.
I mean, no one has made more money except possibly Dave Seville and the Chipmunks. Oh, I'll speed up the tape. Bingo. We'll give you all the money in the world, sir.
Yeah.
I'll enunciate really clearly and speed up the tape. That was David Seville's idea.
Wow.
What's David Seville? You know his real name? Ross Bagdasarian. See? Ross. You, everybody else, trying to eliminate the Armenians, aren't you?
I'm part of the problem.
Yeah.
I'm part of the problem.
So the bellman's bringing down the thing. He goes, we had a magician here a couple months ago. He had a dog. He's pretty good. There you go.
Yep. No. Like I say, my sister lives in Paris, and then someone who's been to Paris goes, where? And I was like, well, shit. I'm stumped. Paris was enough information for me.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And I know there's a comedic magician with a dog. Don't think anyone's going to ask me any follow-ups.
Right, exactly.
I think I'm going to get one further inquiry as to what's happening.
Was that Alex Ramone? What?
What?
Was it Mr. Piffles?
Yeah.
Or was it MJ?
That's right. There's two magic dogs that I know of.
Two magic dogs you've worked with.
Two magic dogs I've traveled
traveled.
I've spent time in intimate environments with multiple show business dogs. Yeah. Magic dogs.
Magic dogs.
It's a weird thing to have. I believe that like day 10, I had told myself I have to stop talking about Mr. Piffles every time we talk about MJ because like it just has to be annoying Alex. That but it's so weird to be able to relate. It's so weird to have. I also have traveling with magic dog stories. I would like to share them. No one asks me about them. But I was like, he has to be sick of me bringing it up.
So that's why I have a that sense of the album.
Yes.
Which expands. When I first started listening to Dylan, I was 14, 13, maybe younger. I mean, I knew Blowing in the Wind and stuff before that.
Right.
But before I really started focusing was actually a guy named Bob Dolan who first turned me on to Bob Dylan.
No.
And he's a lawyer now in Greenfield, Massachusetts. And a friend of mine, an old girlfriend, of mine, my first girlfriend, really, first real love, she said she was at something in like a yoga class and Bob Dolan was there. And she said, I've read things Penn has written about Bob Dolan turning him on to Bob Dylan. And he went, oh. Wasn't he the one that ratted me out when I had that paper route?
He cost me $12.
Yeah. Well, no, not $12, $6 maybe.
$6. That guy still owes me $6.
But I decided that Dylan was good, right? Mm-hmm. And I decided that Dylan was an intellectual challenge for me. Mm-hmm. So then it became anything Bob does is good. Now, people will scoff at you for that. There's a great deal of big swinging dick in saying, you were just saying the same thing. I really like Van Halen, but you know, that guitar solo on da-da-da-da is a little weak.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, I hate that more than anything. Because I don't think that it makes you look more intellectual.
Yeah.
But it actually shows that you don't want to grow. If you just take arbitrarily, and I say this, I think it may be, you know, Stephen Banks said to me, you may think that modern music lacks the depth that we had. What it lacks is the amount you've listened to it.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. You know, you listen.
You'll assign the meaning to it as over time, or you'll just dig into more.
Yeah, more. I mean, I really would like, and I'm not going to, you know, although maybe I should. Maybe I really should. I would like to listen to a Taylor Swift album or a Beyonce album. Mm-hmm. I guess those are the two biggest. Mm-hmm. Those are the equivalent of the Beatles now, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Taylor Swift bigger than the Beatles, I suppose, but right. In the same ballpark.
Yeah.
yeah, playing ballparks.
playing gigantic ballparks, yeah. Whenever they want.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's what I've listened to quite a bit of Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
But I haven't put on like one record, like Midnight or one of those records, mm-hmm. and just burned it. Like, yeah. Like I'm talking about 50 times.
Yeah.
Till not only do I know every word, which is one listen, but until I know where the drum hits behind each syllable are, where they're going to come, can anticipate the bass note, understand her phrasing on every word. I got to think there's more in any Taylor Swift song than there is in Eleanor Rigby.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Although I don't know if Paul McCartney broke up with Eleanor Rigby and was writing a hate song. Karma.
Yeah.
So I think that at a certain point, it goes away from the artist and becomes arbitrary. And by the way, that's what friendship is.
Yeah.
Friendship is you bump into somebody randomly, it has to be randomly, yeah. It's, you know, because of geography or time or whatever, you bump into someone, and as you dig deeper into who they are, there becomes a real bond there. Now, some people get thrown out,
right.
You know, Don McLean gets thrown out, Bob Dylan stays, you know, that, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. But in friendship, it's the same thing. But there is something separate from the content, beautiful in the commitment to understand the content. And that's the part that's so important to me. Like maybe if there were some objective way to look at it, The Man in Me is a weaker song than Chimes of Freedom or a weaker mm-hmm. song than Tangled Up in Blue. It's certainly a simpler song. On the surface, there's less intellectual interest. Mm-hmm. But you dig into that song, the very depth itself is of value.
Right.
Whether you're, when you meditate on just a mantra that's repeating the same thing,
right.
That depth that you find, you aren't really claiming that depth is in the mantra. And I'm not in
that's any, a great, and now, yeah, it's a great way to look at listening to songs.
I'm not in any way dismissing
no.
the value of the art. I'm just saying that also digging in, it becomes symbiotic.
Yeah.
The relationship of the two and a really, really nice thing.
Yeah. In fact, you're answering the critical nature of what you're saying. It's a very beautiful notion. That's actually a really nice way to look at it, I think.
Yeah. So I did things at the Dylan Center. that I really like doing. There's a opening film when you go in, a video, and it's a whole room. And in the room, they have a piano and typewriter, some duplicates of what Dylan used. There's a big screen in front of you, and it's one of the most beautiful rooms I've ever been in. I mean, without Dylan, it's just a beautiful room. Mm-hmm. Every wall is a complete video screen. And then on each video screen are other video screens of different shapes and sizes. And the video screen behind shows something, and then each one pops up as the one content goes through. So you have, for instance, Dylan talking about growing up in Hibbing, and you have Dylan's face talking about it, and then you have a parade from that period of time in Hibbing, like home movie, showing on one wall, and then everything is beautifully done. It's just gorgeously done. And you can have Dylan talking about Tangled Up in Blue, and over on one wall is him performing it in Ronaldo and Clara. Then you have another thing of the all the lyric sheet going by with his changes on it. They're all popping up. And it's meant to be watched from the front, and then you have the other stuff peripherally. Well, I went in, watched the whole thing with Stephen Banks, and I went in again, watched the whole thing with Mark Garland. Then I went in by myself and turned to the side and watched the whole thing just on the side. Then I went in again and turned to watch the whole thing on the back.
Oh, my God.
And you see the people that run the Dylan Center going, oh, come on, Dad.
Come on.
Just calm down. What the fuck is wrong with you?
We get it. You know things about the man.
By the way, we're a little sick of this. Why aren't you?
That's, you know, but yeah, I my example of this always is when Sarah and I used to live near Yankee Stadium, just a couple of subway stops in Yankee Stadium, so we could spontaneously go to day games. Mm-hmm. And if we found a good deal of tickets, great. If not, there's all a bunch of bars and stuff across the way. And so we piled into a bar across Yankee Stadium one time because we missed out on a good deal of tickets and we didn't want to, you know, do whatever. And in the bar across from the stadium, filled with everyone wearing Yankees gear, you would swear I was in Boston. The way they just ripped on every Yankee compared to old Yankees and how they're not good Yankees and that kind of thing. You know,
yeah,
like that to me is like, this is what I mean. This is what I'm talking about. Like, they're like, you're around so long, you literally found a way to make your way to the stadium to sit near it and just rip every player apart because you're a truer fan than the next person.
Yes, I understand that, but yeah, I don't want to say the people at Dylan Center are like, I was saying that mostly to make fun of me.
Yes,
the people there seem very enthusiastic and very into it, and certainly like all the stuff. I look through it and they have, you know, the original release. And I go, I got that.
Oh, that's pretty great. Yeah. Did you end up going to the back room?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
They also have, which is really funny. And this is so funny. Mm-hmm. They have, I didn't see it in person. I saw a picture of it and a description of it. They have, because, you know, they bought everything from Dylan.
Yeah.
So they have everything Dylan threw in the back room. They have, you know what mailbags look like? Mm-hmm. Like the Houdini escape from?
Yes.
To put it in terms that...
I was going to say, you know that I relate only because Johnny Thompson has a mailbag escape in his
book.
Right,
right.
But yes, I do know giant mailbags.
Giant mailbags.
That you recognize from Christmas movies where they bring them in and show all the letters from Santa.
Right, right, right.
From the courtroom.
It is overflowing. Overflowing, right?
Yeah.
And it says in the captioned picture, this overflowing, it says... 1965 fan letters to Bob Dylan unopened.
Oh, man.
So, boy, the little rude supervisor in me when they delivered it, that's fine. An overflowing mailbag.
With those letters.
Yeah. Of all, you know,
man.
Comments on Bob Dylan, along with Christmas cards from all four Beatles. Oh, my gosh. And, you know, a Christmas card from Jimmy Carter.
Nuts.
Yeah. It's just stuff.
Insane.
That he, and you know, an incredible postcard from Pete Seeger going, everyone's saying I hated your electric performance at the Newport Folk Festival, and I was running around with an axe to cut the power cable and screaming you were awful. None of that's true, Bob. I enjoyed the show. I was trying to get them to mix the bass down a little bit so the vocal would be stronger. That's all. I don't know how this will get out of proportion. Sincerely, Pete.
Fascinating. I mean, just fascinating, because that story lives on.
Yeah.
That view of the Newport plugging in.
Oh, they also have the Newport Folk Festival electric performance.
Right.
And you hear at the end, and there is no doubt there is booing.
Yeah.
No doubt. There is more applause and more cheering.
Right.
And that's just not part of the story.
No.
But there's booing there.
I guess it's actually in no one's interest to right. tell a nuanced truth on that, right? Because Bob gets to be the crazy rebel in that story.
And brave. And
yeah, yeah.
No
yeah.
one's interested. Also, in defense of the whole band, I mean, Levon Helm later, when they were being booed, couldn't stand it. Couldn't stand going on stage and being booed.
Yeah.
I imagine if you were out on stage and 20% of your audience was booing you.
Yeah, that'd be tough.
That'd be tough.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And your memory of it would be that everybody was booing.
This is one of my worst shows ever.
Because if two people don't like the show,
yeah,
you're heartbroken.
Yeah.
So imagine 20% of the audience going, boo, you Judas, which is what they were yelling.
Right.
You Judas, boo. I can't imagine that. If you did a lie detector on Bob Dylan and said, was everybody booing, he wouldn't say yes and pass it.
Right.
If lie
detectors worked and that again, and the guy who was running it knew how to run it. And...
But, you know, because I would have certainly, had that been a reaction to a show I did, I would have told that story forever. Everybody was booing me and I would have believed it.
Yeah.
Because it's like the people that are, fuck them. You know, I have a friend who was at that Newport Festival when Bob went electric. And he said, we were in the back cheering. We just loved it. Everybody around us loved it.
Yeah.
But that, you know, that's not the whole audience.
No.
And we know one person yelling boo.
Yeah.
So picture at that festival, picture.
One person not smiling once.
Yeah.
Not even picture, booing, but just.
200 people. Boo!
No.
No, you're not going to like
it. It's awful.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So I'm going to change the subject drastically.
Let's do it.
Before you do,
yeah,
we had a Bob Dylan question come in the mail a few weeks ago, and it relates a little bit here. Do you want to hear it?
Mm-hmm.
The gist of it was the person had been to a concert maybe 20 years ago, years back, and wasn't prepared for it, and is planning on going to another one soon, wants to know if you have any advice for what he should listen to on albums. Currently, that he should prepare for?
That's a really good question.
It is.
It's a really easy job because Bob's set lists have been more static. The Rough and Rowdy Tour, which is out now, he's been playing. Well, he kind of did some surprising things. He played a John Mellencamp song when he was in Indiana.
Oh, nice.
He's been playing some local artist song, one cover in every city. I think he actually did Springsteen, New Jersey.
I got to find out what song he did.
So you don't know what that's going to be.
Yeah.
But you can look at the set list and listen to all those songs and really know those songs. That will help you tremendously because it's really hard to sometimes, for anybody, it's hard to understand all the lyrics. If you know the lyrics well and you can see what changes he's putting in, what phrases he's putting in, if you know the songs and the arrangements, I mean, some of them will be startling.
Mm-hmm.
Like all of a sudden it'll go, oh, I didn't know Masters of War was reggae. You know, there'll be that kind of stuff.
Right.
But if you're familiar with the material, and because we have the inner tube that you can look things up, you can find the set list of the city he played last night.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you know that's going to be very close to the set list you're going to see whenever you're going. And then I would put together a playlist that set list in order.
Because so you can known hear the nuances. Sometimes playing musically different than the album on
totally.
Certain tracks.
Yeah. Totally.
So you do.
But if you know the album, that'll right. help you see what he's exploring there.
That's
another. And one of the things at the Dylan Museum that's amazing is "Tangled Up in Blue," which is his third most played song in tours. Someone might know, but that song has done incredible lyric changes. and they chart the lyric changes with his divorce.
Ooh.
And what words changed. Because Tangled Up in Blue is really interesting because Bob moves the eye around. The first person moves around in that song. Never heard anybody do it. But in some songs, he's the guy who comes in after the relationship mm-hmm. and breaks it up. And sometimes he's the guy that starts relationship and has it broken up on him.
Oof.
So where the eye is changes. And I can't think of another example of an artist doing that going, okay, well, first person is now going to be that guy.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Murder Song by Aurora.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Changes from the guy to the girl.
And Elvis Costello has done that as well. He did a whole song that matched it.
Yeah.
But one of the things is it's a couple, right? And in one of the earlier versions, it's, now I'm going back to there. I got to get to her somehow. And then the very next iteration, which is a couple of years later, is I got to get to them somehow. And now he's not interested anymore in finding the woman. He's interested in finding the couple.
Yeah.
Which, very different thing. Very different thing about bonding and friendship. It's really interesting.
Very cool.
Thanks. That goes up to Chris Harris.
Okay, good.
Now, thank can you, I ask Chris. You to change the subject drastically?
Please. Lenny Bruce.
Oh, yes.
Who incidentally is a song by Bob Dylan called Lenny Bruce.
So it's not that drastic of a... It's really a segue.
We could say... Well, that's because Bob Dylan, we could segue into anything. Yeah. We can segue into segues. Lenny Bruce, who is responsible for stand-up comedy as we know it,
mm-hmm.
not alone, but he's certainly one of the ones who's responsible for stand-up comedy as we know it. There's, very hard to imagine you'd have Richard Pryor without Lenny Bruce. And without Richard Pryor, you don't have anything.
Right.
You wouldn't have George Carlin without Lenny Bruce.
Right.
Lenny Bruce, a very, very important comedian, had a very short and tragic life in some ways because of fighting for First Amendment rights. Mm-hmm. Of course, when there's drug abuse involved, it's always hard to decide chicken or egg. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Lenny Bruce had one daughter, one child, Kitty Bruce. Mm-hmm. Kitty Bruce is a wonderful, wonderful person. I think I've met her once, but I've been in contact with her. Not much.
Right.
Provenza's really good friends with her, and a lot of people are really good friends with her, but I'm not. But I know her just a little bit. But a wonderful, wonderful person. And did an awful lot, just so much, to keep her father's legacy alive, and did so much to present his material out there, and did so much to help other comedians, kind of in Lenny's name. Not to dismiss her at all, but she kept a lot of the heart of her father going. She's about my age-ish. Mm-hmm. I mean, plus or minus 10. I mean, I don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
She's having incredibly serious health problems now. These have turned into financial problems.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of comedians have gotten together, and there is a fund to try to help out Kitty Bruce. You know, I dropped a little jingle,
mm-hmm.
Not a lot, but I helped try to help Kitty a little tiny bit. There's a website if you're interested in laying some do re mi on Kitty Bruce.
Yeah,
you can go to, it's a weird website, Give Butter, GiveButter.com/Kitty Bruce, one word. Kitty Bruce, KittyBruce. GiveButter.com/Kitty Bruce. And, just lay some jingle on it. If you don't want to lay some jingle on her, which is fine, everybody has, every charity is valid with the exception of the ones done by people in Congress. There's a lot of charities and we all make our decisions, and I'm not saying that this is the best one, but if it strikes your heart at this moment, but if you don't want to give any jingle, please go to givebutter.com/Kitty Bruce. You'll see a video there of people talking about Kitty and Lenny Bruce. It's done by Paul Provenza, although I don't even think he's credited, but Paul Provenza put it together, edited it, I think shot a lot of it. And Triumph, the insult dog, talking about Lenny Bruce is one of the finest 2 or 3 minutes I've ever seen. Triumph is just hysterical. You know, Robert Smigel.
Smigel.
Hysterical.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's shot really funny, and Provenza edits it in great, great way. So you see Sarah Silverman talking.
Speaking from her heart.
From her heart.
Yeah.
And then Triumph. I don't want to give away the jokes.
Yeah, yeah.
Triumph, the insult dog, being just brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. In case you're interested.
Yeah.
In case you wanna, you should go and do it. And I promised, I didn't promise. Provenza said if you want to bring it up on the podcast, that should be nice.
Yeah.
So now I've done that.
Givebutter.com/Kitty Bruce.
Kitty Bruce, yes. Yeah. Nice. And if you don't know about Kitty Bruce, you know, you might want to find out a little more.
Yeah.
She's an interesting person. It's so fascinating, those people that that keep alive a family legacy, you know. Yeah. You see the way people choose to do it. You know, Moon Zappa has a very different way than Kitty Bruce doing it. You know, Lord Buckley's daughter.
Yeah.
You know, they're remembering someone they loved very much, and they're also in the public eye, and they also, it's a very complicated thing, and one that I'm very glad I didn't have to deal with. I think, you know, Kitty Bruce having to decide in her life how much of her life is dedicated to her father.
Yeah.
That must be a really tough decision.
Yeah.
I wouldn't pretend to understand it at all.
No.
But Lenny Bruce was certainly important, and Lenny Bruce certainly got a raw deal. You know, he finally was pardoned. You know that.
I know, which is so crazy. Was it posthumous?
Yeah, yeah. By 40 years.
Yeah, yeah.
It was posthumous, but he was pardoned. So Lenny Bruce is no longer convicted of obscenity.
Oh, good.
it was our buddy Bob Korn Revere.
That's right.
That led that up and got him pardoned. Yes, along with Kitty Bruce.
Right.
Kitty Bruce was a big part of getting her father pardoned. Yeah.
So I love Bob. Bob does great work.
Yeah. Now, and he's now working at FIRE.
Yeah.
Which I don't forget what it stands for. Yeah. But it's one of the freedom of speech things. And Sigrid, his wife, Sigrid Fry Revere, his wife is, she's trying to do a whole database of canceled comics.
Oh, wow.
And Dara Gottfried is helping her. Speaking of Kitty Bruce,
yes.
Dara Gottfried.
Yeah.
Dara Gottfried is you know, balancing, and I speak with her every day, text with her every day.
Yeah.
Communicate with her every day. She's, you know, she's balancing that, you know, how much is being Dara Gottfried and how much is Max and Lily and their family and how much is remembering and keeping alive her husband's work.
One of the things that's fascinating is that Dara still runs the Patreon for Gilbert's podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And that went through like an instant transition to just doing great things for his legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And also like her, the daughter, Lily made a doc.
Yes, very nice. About her father's artwork.
Yes.
Which has some wonderful appearances by me. That's winning awards, by the way.
That's amazing. But the thing is, like, you thought without the podcast, you still want to support it or not. Turns out it's just a fascinating way to stay on top of Gilbert's legacy. There's all kinds of different things popping up all the time that Gilbert memories is alive and thriving. It's pretty great.
Yeah, he is. We're actually working with Dara and a few other people on a TV show. So you have something to say there, Reddy?
Just clarifying his visual artwork, the documentary.
Yeah, visual artwork.
And it's Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression.
Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression. That's FIRE. Now, let me just talk. We haven't been on the show for a while.
No.
We go a little long. What the fuck? I'm bothered by acronyms that I believe are done backwards.
Mm.
I do not like
that. You start with the word you like, and then you try to build meaning into the word.
Yeah, and they do that all the time.
Acronym.
And it pisses me off. Acronym.
Backronym.
Backronym, yeah. I do not like, oh, we're going to call it FIRE. What can that be? Fight for individual.
Yeah.
Let me see. Could be freezing Inuits retire early. Freezing Inuits retired early.
Good.
FIRE.
That's
good. No, shouldn't it be related to free speech? Well, we just wanted words, right? Well, they should be tied in. Well, freezing Inuit is tied in. The Inuits are they live in a culture in the north of the Arctic Circus. It's cold.
Last I checked, it's cold up there.
Yeah, freezing Funny. Inuits retire early.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't they retire early? They're freezing their nutsacks off. That's so sit warm in the igloo.
Yes.
Yeah, that's it.
For backronyms, does anybody have Gary Busey's phone number handy?
I do.
Okay. Let's run fire by him. See what he's got.
I think frozen Inuits retire early.
Yeah, good. Exactly. Finally, get those guys some sunshine. Literally. Yeah.
But you know what fire really stands for, Eddie?
What's that?
Self-contained underwater breathing apparatus. That was Ben Sunday School. Cha-cha-cha. You become naked. Now, SCUBA, I believe, is a good acronym, right? Because I don't think they said, how do we get this to spell SCUBA? They didn't. See, that's the acronym by which all others are measured.
Yeah.
SCUBA is the perfect acronym. NASA is a fine acronym.
Yes.
FIBI, well, that doesn't stand for anything. That's a fine initial.
SWITI.
SWITI.
Yeah, sitting warmly in the igloo.
SWITI. You know we love you. Hey, Matt Donnelly. Do you have anybody to thank?
Yes, I want to thank the fine people who support us at patreon.com and keep this podcast afloat. And I think we'll answer some questions Reddy's gotten recently right after the credits as well. I want to thank Erica P. Heartless. My noodling sounds dirty, but I kind of like it. Harry the Gorilla Magician, Don Dottie, Kevin Burke, David McLaughlin, Old Bear Greg, Carrie, Charlie Sheets says trans rights, No Shit Sherlock, and Shelley Ruger. Those are three different names. Timothy Carver, get well soon, Timothy. Jenny loves Penn like Penn loves Dylan. There you go.
Oh, that's very nice.
She'll click on all your weird tricks that you've done, figure out which ones, why you change stuff. Stephen Brace Girdle wants to know if you're saying magic castle or magic asshole. Coach Rat Bastard, Emery the extra longshoreman, Brian Curry, Jamie Swan, My Dixie Wrecked, Will Jason, Dave, I want to finger your cunt Brenner, Sunday Sinner Pod, Tristan Connett, Omar Rivera, Vile Eric Gila, The Bad Humor Man, Aaron Boyd, Mason Gooch, Vaughn, DJ Double Chicken Bearhoff, Sagebrush, Matthew Mishu, Luke Mellon, Eileen Hunter, Samuel Stewart, James Sinclair, Kevin Krovchek, Jason Andrew Davidson, Peter B. Clark, Average Seal, Ben Price, Matt Williams, Soapy Fresh, Brad Sherlag, Mike Kavanaugh, Rafiki, Stephen Feldman, Jonathan P., Vote for Trump 2024, and NewRuleFX.com.
We got Vote for Trump 2024.
That someone changed their name to that.
Thank you. I love you.
And we have a trans rights person. So we have the spectrum here.
It's the same person.
I don't think it is.
It is.
Okay.
Maybe not.
2 points of confusion over the advertising recently.
Yeah.
It's mostly because we gave all the information across three episodes instead of one. People weren't able to compile it together.
They don't like that style.
It's what won World War II.
The first question is, if we're not doing ads anymore, why am I still hearing ads?
Okay, so great question.
I didn't know you were.
No, we are still trying to figure out how to properly divorce ourselves from our previous media company.
Ah, I see.
So our RSS feed is still maintained right now under their umbrella. There's a company that hosts our podcast that has our RSS feed.
Yeah, this is really the point of confusion.
Yes.
Distributorship okay. And networks.
Yeah, so the network initially paid for our distribution place. We're going to keep our distribution place, but we're just waiting for some emails to officially divorce ourselves and start paying for that station ourselves. And we just haven't done that yet. Okay.
So the way that I think is best to think about that is Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom is the network.
Yes.
The ads that we said in the show.
To use a contemporary example.
Yeah. The ads that we said in the show are what we don't have anymore.
Yes.
Then the ads that the distributor are shoving in there after the fact, we don't have any oversight of.
We can't. So the ads that you're hearing, by the way, we're getting paid $0 for, if that's what you're
curious
about.
So don't listen to them.
Yeah.
Which is nothing new, right?
Which is nothing new. Technically.
Why we're not with the other company is those ads you heard for the last year. We weren't being paid for.
Yeah, but we thought we were up until like about a month ago.
We thought we were.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we weren't.
So, yeah, we're as angry about those ads as you are.
maybe more. And maybe I'm the most angry of everybody.
Ben is definitely right to be way more angry than you are about all of that. Because Randy and I's check still cleared.
They did. Because they came from me.
So once again, if you're a patron, thank you so much.
Yeah. Which brings us to the other point of confusion.
Okay.
We said that we're relying solely on Patreon. And some people took that to mean we're switching to Patreon, which is not the case. We've been with them for, what, 2 years now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Roughly?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and we may not. I have got a Mutual of Omaha Wild Kingdom. Glenn's cooking a deal with Mutual of Omaha.
Yes.
Or the modern equivalent. And there's a couple companies that have come up and said, you know, we could just cut out the middleman who took all the money. And just directly support it. Yeah. And of course, if we're going to do that, the company that we will have will be so carefully vetted.
Yes.
I mean, more than we even did on the ads, to make sure it's something we really like and really feel good and give you.
But this will be clear. So if you still get ads, you can still sign up for Patreon, and it's the same episodes without the ads.
You know, the podcast I listen to,
that
I always want, I'll talk about, I'll do a whole show on this sometime, is Andrew Hickey's A History of Rock Music in 500 Songs.
So good.
So good. And I do that with the-
And it's Patreon only, right?
No. You get a regular, but if you do the Patreon, you get extra supplementary stuff.
Yeah.
And you'd say, well, wait a minute, Ben. If this podcast itself is going to be 650 hours, why do I want supplementary stuff? And I would answer back, I'll see you at the Dillon Center.
Yes, and there'll be more as we continue to focus on Patreon more. There'll be more advantages to having that RSS feed besides just getting the ad-free episodes.
Thanks.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.